CTBK gives executives and owners of mid-market businesses unparalleled confidence and clarity so you can focus on strategic objectives and organizational success. Their multidisciplinary advisors, accountants, and team members have a wealth of experience and are all available and responsive to each client to ensure the most effective advice, actions, and outcomes, no matter the situation or complexity level. That experience base and one-team approach, combined with integrated and efficient way of operating, enable them to be truly proactive partners, doing the best thing for their client every time. Visit ctbk.com or call 716-630-2400 to learn how CTBK can work for you.
Let's do some more Tim Graham and Friends, brought to you by CTBK, CPAs and Business Consultants. I'm Tim Graham of The Athletic. Jonah Bronstein is not with us. He is on assignment, but we are introducing a new F of the Tim Graham and Friends. John Butler, former Bills defensive backs coach and passing game coordinator, is joining us from the home office in Orchard Park. John, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, it's great. Appreciate you asking me to come on, and it's good. It'll be good to catch up and talk about whatever you want.
Well, John left the Bills back in, was it February, March?
I think officially it was, the last day of January, so you could say February 1st, January 31st, just as far as, those records. But yeah, a couple weeks after the season, after everything kind of shook out.
What went into your decision to step away temporarily? At least for now, it's temporary. We could talk about what your plans are now that you've gotten a taste of life outside of the NFL rat race. From the looks of it, you might be enjoying it.
I'm not going to complain.
You look fresh.
I do. I feel fresh. I feel I probably lost about 18 pounds since the end of the season. Joined the gym. When things like this happen, you kind of take a level of checks and balances, not only in your career, but your life. And obviously when you're coaching the NFL and you have the level of success we had in Buffalo, you're putting like an imbalanced amount of that into your life. 90% of your life is that, and maybe the other 10% is your family, your friends. And unfortunately, that's just the nature of it. So you let yourself go a little bit, both physically and mentally. So it's been good to kind of, reconnect with that, reconnect with myself, get myself back into some shape mentally and physically, spend a lot of time with my son, who's 13 years old. When you go back to your original question, it really just came down to, when Sean and I sat down, and again, as I reiterated, I spoke with you and previously, in the article and then off camera, when you have a mutual decision like this, it's, there was levels of concern that Sean had about me being back based on the decision he made to go with Bobby. And obviously there was levels of concern for me. And so when we sat down and everything went about, it was just, a couple different conversations where this came about, and it really just settled on not being a part of the Bills organization anymore. And as difficult as that is, those decisions are hard because I really, really love my players. And I think they can attest to that based on your interaction with them. That's really what it came down to, is that was the hardest part, because that's who you're investing in. That's who you're spending so much of your time with. And those relationships, while they are what they are, but once you remove yourself from the situation, those relationships aren't the same anymore. So I miss that. I miss my experiences with them, the opportunity to make their lives better, not only on the field and off the field, but, these decisions aren't easy. It obviously, when the decision's made, it obviously affects not only their organization, it affects my family and what our future is. But at the end of the day, I don't regret it. I think it was the right decision. And it's going to give me some time to gain continued perspective on not only my life and my career, but, what's out there in the, let's just say, the second half of my life.
Yeah. Leslie Frazier walking away from the Bills a year ago, really threw the coaching staff into a bit of disarray for a while. Sean McDermott deciding that he was going to call the defensive plays. and then finally promoting Bobby Babich up from linebacker's assistant to defensive coordinator. We still don't know if Bobby's going to call the plays or if Sean McDermott's going to continue to do so. But what was that last year like without a defensive coordinator? Sean assuming that role, the numbers speak for themselves. They seem to do pretty well. And I think that if Terrell Bernard isn't injured against the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm not putting this on him, but the game was so close that a player like Terrell Bernard on the field, that this is just my opinion. I think you probably win that game. What was that like last year trying to traverse the head coach as the defensive play caller and getting through that period when Leslie kind of blindsided everybody by just deciding to up and leave?
I would say it was a challenge, but everything in life's a challenge, you know. Hold on 1 second. My phone is. That's great. Here. I would say it was a challenge, but you know, you have a relationship with a guy as the head coach, and then a different hat is put on, and he is now the defensive coordinator, which obviously Sean was very heavily involved with the success of the defense. In I was there 6 years, so Sean's been there seven, you know, during his tenure. And so I would say it was just his imprint was already all over the level of success that we've had. And so he just became more involved on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, when you're also the head coach, you're relying on your assistant coaches to share the responsibility and continue that standard. And I would say there was a pretty strong balance of that distributed to both myself and Bobby, whether it was scripting or whether it was, you know, game planning or whether it was talking to, you know, presenting to the defense or whatever it was, there's multiple levels that both myself and Bobby were involved heavily with throughout the season, way more than we ever were with Leslie. But that relationship is the thing that you have to manage, and probably I could have managed better, meaning that the relationship, he's the head coach. And even though he may say, hey, when I'm in here, I'm the defensive coordinator, you know, you never can forget that he's the head coach first. And I would say that's a challenge that all assistant coaches have to be able to navigate is when your play caller, whether it's an offensive play caller, it's the head coach, which obviously there's a lot more of them in the NFL than there is the other side, but a defensive play caller and, you know, the freedom to express your ideas and then the environment with which you express those ideas, you've just got to make sure that, you know, you know the crowd that you're in and you make sure that they're presented in a way that is, I guess what I would say would be, you know, non-combative. You know, you're in a competitive environment where you're trying to, you know, win at all costs within the rules. And sometimes, you know, when you're in these meetings or you're on the sidelines or you're having communication, you know, the tact that you have to have and the level of, you know, just poise and let's say emotional intelligence you have to have when you're communicating, not just with the coordinator, but a guy that's a head coach, you have to have an awareness of that. Because obviously at the end of the day, he's not only just your boss on defense, he's your boss. He runs the entire organization from the head coach's seat. So a challenge definitely. But one that if you look at like the success that we had and the players that we played with and the results that we've got, you know, I would hang my hat. I've told people this in our conversations. I think this year for me personally was probably the best year that I've coached because you're dealing with injuries. You're dealing with young players. You're keeping a level of success high while meeting a standard while you're bringing in, you know, whether you're bringing in Rasul Douglas at mid-year, you're bringing in, you know, obviously Christian Benford, a second year, you know, late round draft choice, or obviously Dane Jackson in and out of the lineup, you know, the safeties in and out from a standpoint of being injured and finding a role for Taylor Rapp. You know, I'd argue that the level of success was just as high as it was when the year we were number one in the league. So that's just the nature of it. But again, yeah, it is a challenge when you're, when the head coach is also the coordinator on your side, and it's a challenge you've got to be able to manage.
Well, the consistency has been amazing, whether it was Leslie Frazier calling the plays, whether it was Sean McDermott calling the plays, whoever you've had back there. Let me read off some rankings here. This was from the story that I wrote a couple months ago about your departure from 2018 through last season. That is encompassing your entire tenure with the Buffalo Bills and either fully running or having a heavy hand in everything within the secondary. Buffalo's defense, second in points allowed, first in passing yards per game, first in yards per completion, first in yards per attempt, first in touchdown passes allowed, sixth in completion percentage, second in interceptions, second in receiver fumbles lost. That means that's usually your guys popping them. First in opponent passer rating, first in passing first downs, first in average depth per target. Now you might wonder what that means, but that means to complete a pass, they're not going too far downfield. And
right.
Let's go back. Let's flash back to what I said earlier. Sixth in completion percentage and first in average depth per target. That means teams aren't throwing the ball very far downfield and they're still not completing the passes. Second right. in air yards allowed per completion and fifth in yards after the catch. I mean, come on. And I
you're
read those.
Officially,
I read
you're officially
those
hired as my agent.
I'm sorry?
I said, you're officially hired now as my agent. That's what I've been looking for. That's I need. You need to change fields and represent coaches based on the statistics you just ran off.
Well, that's and the other thing too. If I were to be your agent, I would say, and you can't necessarily tell this from my article. You'd have to pretty much read everything I've ever written to really glean this from the story. John, I don't think I've ever had a story in which I had so many people who wanted to talk to me about who I was writing about. Now, granted, I'm in a business where I can walk into a locker room full of people and walk up to locker stalls. I mean, that's one thing. But this was an out-of-season story, and I heard from Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Damar Hamlin, Levi Wallace. I think I might be leaving somebody out. And I had to kind of stop the calls from coming because everybody wanted to say kind words about you. Not just kind, but they wanted to praise the work that you've done. These were guys who were going out of their way to do it. It wasn't me walking up to somebody and saying, hey, you got a couple minutes to talk about John Butler. And a lot of times guys might be like, well, shit, I can't say no. Even if I don't necessarily like the guy.
Sure.
If I say no, then these are guys who were calling me to talk about you. I don't know. That's a lot in there of the production and also the respect of your players. When you look back on your time with the Bills, hell, maybe even let's go back to Houston or your time at Penn State or whatever. But do you have something? Let's see if we can distill it down to one or two things that you're most proud of what you've been able to do, that reflects what makes you feel like you've done you've done this well in your career.
I would say that, you know, the reason is because I'm a genuine guy. I'm authentic and I'm always honest with them. And I communicate with them very clearly. And you have to establish that relationship first. You know, I don't come in being a prick, but like, I think players, especially pro players, the 10 years that I coached in the NFL, starting with Jonathan Joseph and Kareem Jackson and AJ Bouye and Quentin Demps and, you know, Andre Howe, and trying to think, I don't want to miss anybody, obviously, but like really good DBs in Houston, and then coming to Buffalo and the same thing, whether it was walking in the door and Poyer and Hyde were all pros and Tre'Davious White was coming off a great year. And then we drafted Taron Johnson, and then we signed Levi Wallace, and then we signed Dane Jackson. You know, with me, the common theme was always, I'm not trying to sell them on me. I'm just trying to develop a relationship. And I think that my level of communication, my ability to be authentic with them, and then I think I know what I'm doing. And I think you add those things together, they see like, well, okay, this guy's trying to get me better. He's honest with me. He never lies to me. He never bullshits me. He never like speaks in half tone. And you got to like, they're never reading the gram. I'm a black and white guy. Sometimes people like that. Sometimes people don't, because sometimes people don't like hearing like the truth. But with players, they want the truth. They want communication. And then on top of it, the tactical skill of like, we would go out there every day and we'd be out there as long as the league would allow us to be out there. And players don't always love that. But I think what they saw was the shit that I was working on them with, they were getting better. And so then, like, I could say, hey, listen, I coached in Houston. We won the division championship 4 years. We were number one defense in the league. We had the same stats in Houston that we've had here. And here's the program for you to get better. You got to come out 15 minutes extra every day. Work on your footwork, your hands, your eyes. You got to come up and study film with me on your own. You got to study, you know, you got to bring me questions. Like, it's an all encompassing. If you do that, I had success with AJ Boye, an undrafted player, signed a big time contract to go to Jacksonville. And then we've done the same thing here. And obviously players are motivated by two things, playing time and money. And if you can develop them, they'll play. And if they play well, they're going to make money. And all that has to happen is people look at, okay, well, look at Levi. He started 47 straight games. What happened? Oh, and he got paid. Look at Dane Jackson. He just signed a $15 million contract with, you know, there's seeds of success there that I think that, as it got going, players would look and say, and then they would the same things they would say to you that they said to you. Like, if a rookie came into the locker room, was bitching about, man, why we always have to go out there? Why are we doing this? Why is JV always on my ass? Well, then the other guys would say, do you want to play? Do you want to make money? Do you want to have a long career? Like, just look at, the proof is in the pudding. So I think that, and it was a constant. There was never this. It was never like, okay, you come out tomorrow. You don't, like, I was just steady with them. And it wasn't always easy. I mean, like, you'd also look at, like, there's times when, like, Dane Jackson had some really good success and then all of a sudden he wasn't a starter anymore. Well, then that relationship is, hey, I got to be honest with him and I got to make sure that he has to know that he's going to still have to be ready like he did this year. Somebody gets hurt, somebody, you know. So I would just say that level of success, it almost brought me to tears when Dane Jackson called me after this. You know, I was actually in Florida with my friends and he called and said, hey coach, I just want to let you know I'm signing with Carolina. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, I'm getting a nice contract. And then of course I had to do my research, and you know, the fact that they would call and they tell you that, brings me to tears, because I feel like that whatever level of impact I had on that kid's life was one where, you know, that's really why you do it. People think you go to the NFL and it's all business, and it is, but you know, Sean created a great culture there, and you know, Bean has done a great job of bringing in like-minded players of the coaches. So, you know, you have a shared experience kind of coming in the door. And to me, like, you know, when I hear from those guys now, or like, you know, Damar called me the other day, and then Damar went to my son's school because him and my son have a relationship. I mean, that's the shit that, like, I know I'm a good coach. I know I've had a lot of success, but at the end of the day, like, to see the impact and the relationships that I still have with these guys and the respect that we have for each other, like, at the end of the day, when I'm sitting on the beach at 70, those are the things that I'm going to be remembering more so than, you know, man, I should have been calling the defenses and I wasn't, or they should have ran this defense and they didn't. I mean, that's the perspective that I would say I'm even getting even more of now, because when you talk to these guys, you're not talking about plays that, you know, they call you on the phone or we text. We're not talking about plays that they had in games or money they're spending. We're talking about things that maybe I said in a unit meeting, or things that I said on the field that they just, you know, they shake their head at and laugh at, but they got something out of. So it really is, it's about the true relationships you have with the ones that we've invested in each other. And that ultimately is the foundation of a great relationship.
Just want to point out, some of these names that you're mentioning were not first round draft picks. There's a lot of talent in that defensive backfield, but let's just, like you mentioned, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer were already there. Those are obviously two great guys to have as bedrock foundational parts of your secondary. But Dane Jackson, 7th round pick, Christian Benford, 6th round pick, Damar Hamlin, 6th rounder, Taron Johnson, 4th rounder. Now, 4th rounder, I mean, there's no guarantees there. I mean, yeah, 4th round. Okay. That's a
right.
Technically a day 3 guy, but you know, but 4th rounder to develop into one of the best, if not the best, nickel cornerbacks in the NFL. Levi Wallace, undrafted, started all those games. And I also want to point this out too. Again, you know, we start this podcast and I think there is a high percentage of my listeners who already know who you are, because a high percentage of my listeners are really big Bills fans, and you have to be a really big Bills fan to want to put up with my bullshit and this rinky-dink podcast. So you gotta be a diehard. You really are right. Thirsty for insight if you're watching this podcast. But I also want to point out the injuries that your defensive backfield dealt with, because it's not just a bump and a nick here and there. It was Trey White, torn ACL. Well, I don't want to say, I always hesitate to say which ligament it actually was. Let's just say he blew out his knee, and the Achilles. Jordan Poyer, pretty much you name it. You take out the game operation, and you can look at pretty much every injury this guy had, including a collapsed frickin' lung, or a punctured lung, or whatever it was. Micah Hyde, a career-threatening neck injury. Damar Hamlin, cardiac arrest, of course. And then there were a couple other guys who were taken off in ambulances, Dane Jackson and Taylor Rapp even. These are not just injuries. This is scary shit. This is emotional stuff.
How
do you deal with keeping all that together? And I'm including the young guys too, the lack of pedigree guys who had to be ready to go, like Hamlin, like Benford, like Dane Jackson, but also dealing with all these borderline catastrophic injuries and trying to keep these guys together and focused and consistent, because that to me, you can look at the talent and say, okay, well, of course these guys are supposed to play well, or that, you know, you see it now in retrospect. Yeah. Christian Benford's a really good player. Well, nobody really projected that when he was drafted, or else he would have gone in the third round. Right.
Sure.
I'm rambling now a little bit, but I think that you look at the nuance of what you had to deal with along the way. And that's what stands out to me.
Yeah. I think your question is multi-layered. I think you were asking earlier about like the level of like these guys getting where they got drafted or where they didn't. And it's a testament to Brandon Bean and his staff and Sean as well. But when we're like evaluating guys at the end of the draft, there's two philosophies. And when I came into the league, it was like get these guys late and get them all based on measurables, the fastest, the longest, the strongest. And after like my first year, I'm like, wait a second, if these guys could really run and they're really fast and they're really talented, why aren't they getting drafted in the first round, second round? Well, it's because they didn't have the football character that was required. And so I shifted. I coached 19 years in college, and then I went to the NFL and with the Houston Texans, and I guess 2014, I think. And so after that first year, I was like, I don't think I want those guys. I want guys that are actually the opposite, that are good football players, but have elite levels of DNA. Like, they're tough. They love football. They love their teammates. They're willing to work, all of those things. They're willing to get better and put the time in, you know? So, and that's where like, then that plan, then when I got to Buffalo, I was able to say, listen, guys, I went through this in Houston. And because it would come up still, like, hey, what about, we're looking for height, weight, speed in the sixth and seventh round. I would say, well, if you had a guy that was height, weight, speed, why wouldn't they draft him in the first round? Well, he's got football character issues. Well, he misses this. I'm like, well, he's going to do the same thing here. And so it was good. It was great that they were able to, like, when Levi Wallace, he was who he was athletically. He always was, but he was an A+ in every other area. Dane Jackson, same thing, A+ in every other area. Benford, A+. So these guys have elite levels of football DNA. And Micah Hyde, I mean, Jordan Poyer, if there was an A++ football DNA. I mean, talking about, and that's why these guys that are drafted in the sixth or seventh round turn into 5 to 10 year players that are on their second and third contract. So I always appreciated that with the Bills front office, because when we would get to these meetings, if they would present me with one of those guys, I would rather stay away. I wanted the Dane Jacksons, the Levi Wallaces, the Christian Benfords of the world, the guys that were the Jamarcus Ingrams of the world. He's going to be another one. He's the same thing. And they had the requisite, and, you know, Cam Lewis, another one. I mean, these are all guys that, like, we were sitting around saying they're great football players. They may not be the perfect arm size and 40 time. And, you know, so that part of it is the foundation of them then making it and being around for a long time, because they have it in them. They have that football character. You know, and the second part of your question was, you know, leading into the injuries. Well, I've kind of detached myself from my career over the last couple of months, so I apologize if my memory isn't as great, but I want to say my first 3.5 years up until Thanksgiving Day, New Orleans. Tre White, Levi Wallace, Taron Johnson, Micah Hyde, and Jordan Poyer. I think they played like they might have played 40 something straight games in a row together. I think starting with at or around Levi's, like the middle of his rookie year. From that point on until that Thursday night in New Orleans, those guys, those five, the continuity was incredible.
Yeah, that's a
And
that's in a remarkable stretch of luck.
it was, and it was like, and it would come up all the time in conversations and meetings and like, why are you guys so good? I'm like, well, these guys all have played together. Like, so they've gone through 4 years worth of meetings together where they're all on the same page. Like, you're not communicating with somebody that's new. You're not drilling with somebody that's new. You're not practicing with somebody that's new. You're not in a meet. Like, it was like the five of them. Well, then when Trey got hurt, obviously that kind of, it just sent us on a new track. And as a coach, it's not, you really, that's when you're like, well, now my job is to get ready, get those guys ready to play. We had a game or two, I think a COVID game where Levi missed and Dane had to step in. But I'm talking like from a standpoint of the core group of those guys was together, which is like, it's miraculous. But since then, I don't think they have played a game together all, that they, it was like it just blew up, whether it was Trey getting hurt or, other guys dealing with injuries, Taron being in and out of the lineup. And then obviously, 2 years ago when Micah got hurt with his neck, he was out the majority of the year. And then, Poyer having to freaking take a sprinter van to Kansas City just to play. Like, it was just, but that's the challenge of the coach is like, there's no excuses. Nobody wants to hear that. Oh, well, what if I got up and said, well, Trey's hurt, so we're going to be terrible. Can't say that. It's like, hey, we lost our premier boundary corner, which in the system that when I was in charge of it there, it was your best player was in the boundary and you could manipulate what you were doing all around him. And then obviously then you draft a guy and you try to get, whether it was Kyrie, you're drafting him, trying to get him ready, bringing Christian in. There's not only new pieces because of injury, there's new pieces because of just you have to, the other guys have left. So that was a huge challenge, one that I think we answered successfully. I don't think at any of our time in our tenure you'd ever go and say, well, that the secondary was the weak link of what was going on there. And we didn't always have those five guys playing. But that goes back into the player development part too, where you're getting everybody ready to play as well as the guys that are playing, because when it comes time, they got to be ready. And then your third piece was obviously, the situation with DeMar was unprecedented. It's a situation in an evening and then a week that I'll never, it'll never leave me. I don't think it'll ever leave anybody that was a part of it, because what happened happened. We were all there. And the emotion, the level of emotion and concern for him was at a level you just can't explain. When you get into coaching, you never think you're going to be in a situation where, a player that you're coaching, they all get hurt, but not to the level of what was the potential there. I don't want to dwell on that because obviously he's doing so well, but like that was a hard thing. And then for us to keep that thing together, I think in a way almost gets like they don't understand how hard that really was. Like you're going in the meeting the next couple of days and you're trying, like, we got a game. And we knew the NFL was going to play. Like, there was absolutely zero chance the NFL, regardless of what was going to happen with DeMar, they were going to postpone that game. So you're like, you're trying to get guys, some of his closest friends, Dane Jackson. Like, the only thing that's on his mind is my friend going to be okay? Me, like, is DeMar going to be okay? While at the same time trying to navigate a world that you're going to have a game in 5 to 6 days. And thankfully, he progressed so quickly and was able to kind of get back into the building. And then obviously that later on that week, whether it was Thursday or Friday, we were kind of at that point over the hump, knowing that he was going to live and be and have a chance to live a good life. But then how hard that was emotionally to keep those guys together and focused. But it goes back to the quality of the player and the DNA, and it was in him, and it's just those types of guys. So tremendous experience, tremendously difficult experience, but one that again, all falls back into the character of the person and the quality of the people that you're surrounding them with, you know?
I've said it on this podcast. I've written about it. I've told it to both Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott to their faces, that I think that as disappointing and devastating as that loss was to Cincinnati in the playoffs, and as much as the fans were irate about a missed opportunity, that I think in a few years, if they don't already, people should look back on 2022 as one of the greatest seasons in Bills history because of everything you guys had to deal with, having to win three road games in 12 days because of the game that got moved to Detroit, the top shooting, Kim Pegula's her cardiac arrest and the brain trauma she suffered, taking her away from the team from a front office standpoint. A lot of people didn't know what was going on, what's going to happen. I mean, from top to bottom, the organization just went through the ringer. And I'm even leaving out some things, you know, the snowstorm that, you know, the town went through so much, and the Bills were so important to getting people through things. I know that you guys are just on fumes by the time that that Bengals game rolled around.
Right. You mentioned so many different examples, starting with, you know, the top sting, and then moving forward with, or really was starting with the Kim, and then the top sting, and then the summer, and just
Matt
kind of
Araiza situation,
right.
Dawson Knox losing his brother.
Right. I mean, it was just like one thing after the other. And it's just that just the job's already hard enough. The job is, you know, again, sitting down with some coaches, and it's like, people don't understand how hard this job really is. It's cool. It's a cool job. You know, people from the outside, and, you know, they, and you know, you make some decent money doing it, but like, you're never away from it. And you're always on, and the expectations, obviously, the job actually gets harder the better you get, because the better you get, the more expectations are, like, you know, now the Bills have, I mean, 7 years ago, they hadn't gone to the playoffs in X amount of years. Well, now, you know, since Sean's and Josh's arrival and Brand's arrival, that we've been to the playoffs. Well, now now it's like they've got to take the next step, so to speak.
People are bored with making the playoffs.
Yeah. You never think that would happen. But at the end of the day, that's how quickly life changes. And that's why this job is so difficult, because, you know, you're there's one champion every year, and there's been 50 something years of it, and there's been thousands of games, and, it's just a hard job. And like I said, that year, it just made there were so many landmines and so many obstacles to overcome all the way up and through till, you know, the very end. You know, like, you think about, DeMar played in that snow game, you know, and I think it was the next week. So we got snowed in. It was the coldest day I've ever coached in. And then we get stuck in Chicago, and then we're driving from Rochester, and we get to the airport, and there's 4 feet of snow in everybody's car, and the only people on the roads are us, and that wasn't very safe. And then a week later, you know, I think, or maybe two games later, a week later, the thing happened with him, you know, and then that just, it's emotionally, it's very difficult. Experiences that you live, and it's about, you know, I told the guys all the time, life's about the experiences you live and the people you live with. And we had some times there in Buffalo.
What would have been your forecast about what was to come with the defensive backfield this offseason? You talk about how you never know what's around the corner, and end of an era in so many ways, with both you and a lot of your players no longer with the team, fixtures, mainstays. What are your thoughts on this transition period for them in the defensive backfield?
Yeah, you know, I think it's obviously, you know, it just goes back to the beginning of the last question I asked. That continuity that we had was always in our back pocket. You had Micah Hyde back there as a ball hawk at any time to intercept the ball. You had Jordan Poyer as a field general, just communicating with the corners, the nickel, the safety, the linebacker. You know, like, if you talk to some of those guys, I'm sure the guys that are still there, you know, guys like Terrell Bernard and guys like, you know, Dodson, who's now, I think, in Seattle, I'm not quite sure, but, you know, the younger players that were, you know, they would say they would constantly hear Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde communicating, whether it was walkthrough or whether it's practice or in the game. It's just like, it never stopped. And that creates a level of comfort for players in front of you. Like, if I know what's going on behind me, I know I'm good. And so that level of not only just the communication, but the understanding of that system that, you know, Sean put in 7 years ago, I mean, Poyer played Mike and Jordan. That's 7 years of playing in that system that you can't replicate and you can't duplicate. But that's the job of, their new secondary staff led by Joe D. Joe D's going to do a great job. Love Joe. And I think that's just the challenge they're going to have to accept is that, who's going to be out there other than Taron Johnson that's a mainstay, and how are they going to get them to play? But I would say it's a challenge that I'm sure they're going to be up to.
We mentioned the all those late round successes. I'd be derelict in my duty if I didn't ask. What's the forecast for Kaiir Elam?
Kyrie's a good kid, man. He works really hard. He cares a ton. I think that he has the skill set that they're going to be looking for, potentially. I don't want to speak on their behalf, but I always thought he was going to be better into the boundary because he's long and athletic and can get his body and his hands on people. I think that, everybody takes time. It's everybody's career blossoms at a different time. And, I'm hoping that Kyrie takes the steps that he needs to take and that the Bills need him to take, because he's a great kid. Never once looked at us with a side eye. Always did what we asked to whatever he was asked to do. And I hope that his future's bright. But again, I don't know what steps he's made since, I've been out of the building and since January.
Your thoughts on what they've done in terms of how they've addressed it? I know you're speaking about the guys that you have familiarity with, but do you have any thoughts on Cole Bishop or
I didn't again, when I kind of alluded to it earlier, like when all this happened and there were some opportunities that just didn't materialize, and when it became kind of
Yeah, you're not going.
pretty.
You don't strike me as the guy who you got itchy or needed to go break down some film over the last
No,
couple of months.
I didn't. And that's funny. Like, I mean, I've been doing it for 29 years. What I know about football from now, probably moving forward, is here, and maybe a little bit in this computer that I'm using to do this Zoom thing. But I have not looked at one. Like, I didn't even watch the draft. My dad called me up. He's like, "Hey, you watching this draft?" I'm like, "No, I was watching an NBA game, I think." Just because I think the Sixers were playing. I'm a big Sixers fan, unfortunately. So I don't really know much about the guys that they picked. I don't know anything about them, so it'd be unfair for me to comment on them at all. Because that process, like, it's not like we were involved in that process at all during the season. That process, as far as draft evaluations for coaches, doesn't really pick up, and free agency evaluation for coaches doesn't pick up until you're kind of coming back after the Super Bowl, after your little vacation there. So, I'm not familiar with, who they even brought in and who's there. I know, Taron Johnson's absolute stud. So they've got a good player there that's kind of had to take some leadership roles. And obviously, I have some strong feelings about Christian Benford and what he's done in DeMar. And then Rapp had a nice year for us last year. I think he's going to be a good player for them. Cam Lewis still there. Love him. Tough kid. Good, versatile, multifaceted guy. But as far as the new guys they've brought in, it's obviously going to be a challenge. I mean, because that's a complicated system. The system requires a lot of communication, a lot of understanding, on multiple levels, and in order for those guys to play at the level that Sean's going to expect them to play, they're going to have to, really take a deep dive, not into only the playbook, but the system and how it's run and those types of things.
We were talking before we hit the record button about how you're enjoying this decompression time, being away from the game. And I guess you won't know. This is one of the classic you don't know what you don't know situations. But there's going to probably come a point where you really start to miss the grind a little bit, right? In terms of maybe it's not even until September when it's week one and
Right.
you're sitting on your couch, or watching a college game or whatever. How do you see things unfolding for you towards your next gig?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm working on it, and it's not like I don't know, and I'm just like saying a prayer, and hopefully somebody comes knocking at my door. I'm going through the process of, evaluating the different things, I have going on in my life, and what how they may affect my next step in my career. But I'm going to stay, like, I'm taking a couple trips coming up. I'm going to go visit some pro teams and visit some college teams, really over the next 2 week period, as some of the pro teams get into their OTAs and as some of these college teams are wrapping up spring ball. And then the summer comes, and the summer is the summer. Everybody in the world is basically, the football world shuts down really for like 1 month, and then training camp comes. And I think, I mean, I know come training camp time, I've had been in 29 straight training camps, so I'm sure there's going to be a level of like, I'm going to miss it, because that's the grind. It's like, that's the development part. That's when you're really trying to find out who your team is and who you got and who you're coaching. So I'm sure there'll be a level of that. There hasn't really hit me yet. Hasn't like they're, I know the Bills are back in town here, just because obviously I'm not a fool, but I'm not really missing that part of it, So it's so we'll see. There's I think like I told you too, there's a small chance. There's maybe more than a smaller chance. There's maybe it's another avenue in my career I take just so that I could be more involved in my son's life and more involved in, his. Last, he's getting ready to go to high school. He's going to be in eighth grade and then high school. So maybe, so there's a part of that. But the right situation comes up where, I know they'll value the skill set that I bring and the personality that I bring, and they can value the honesty and the authenticity that I can bring to their organization or to their team. Then I'm going to explore it. And like I said, that's kind of where I'm going through that process over the next 2 weeks. I'll be taking, like I said, taking some trips. But we'll see. It is, life is, I'm 51 years old, so it's like, and a lot of my life is behind me. So it's really now about doing what's right and doing what's good for the last 25 years of that life.
Well, I've enjoyed this conversation, John, and it's been in the works for several weeks. I'm glad that we're finally able to make it happen. And I think a lot of Bills fans are going to enjoy listening to your thoughts. Anything I didn't ask you about that you want to add?
No, I appreciate you, taking the time to have me on, and I appreciate you writing that article. It's nice to hear when people, reach out to you and they're like, hey, this guy wrote a great article, and obviously to hear the feedback from those players that, I knew they felt a certain way about me, but still, it's everybody likes to hear that you've impacted them. So I appreciate you the thoroughness that you went through to get that piece written, and the impact not only I think it had on them, but had on me. And I think it'll eventually help me down the road as well. But and I appreciate you having me on here. It's always nice to talk football and talk, my career at the Bills.
Well, if you ever need an NFL general manager to vouch, just have him give me a call.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll talk
Yeah.
John Butler. I'll be
Yeah.
like, hey,
Right.
man, let me tell you.
Yeah. No
They
question.
don't need to call me. They can just read the article. But
No doubt. Well, I appreciate.
I always like to stockpile NFL general manager phone numbers for future reference.
There you go. Whatever comes that way, I'll what do you, I'll PDF that as part of my resume.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
I'd be honored.
Yep.
Well, John, thanks for this. And hopefully we get to cross paths. Like you say, you're going to be in Orchard Park for at least a little bit.
Yep.
And but you and you can only mow your lawn so often. So
Yeah, the sun's finally out. I mowed it yesterday, and hopefully I'll be out in my golf course hitting some golf balls, and then find a nice establishment by Lake Erie or something and have a cold every once in a while. Other
well,
than
if you're
that,
ever lonely, you got my
yeah.
number.
All right. Sounds
All right.
good.
All right. My thanks to John Butler for joining Tim Graham and Friends, brought to you by CTBK. Thanks to everybody out there for listening, and catch you next time.
CTBK gives executives and owners of mid-market businesses unparalleled confidence and clarity so you can focus on strategic objectives and organizational success. Their multidisciplinary advisors, accountants, and team members have a wealth of experience and are all available and responsive to each client to ensure the most effective advice, actions, and outcomes, no matter the situation or complexity level. That experience base and one-team approach, combined with integrated and efficient way of operating, enable them to be truly proactive partners, doing the best thing for their client every time. Visit ctbk.com or call 716-630-2400 to learn how CTBK can work for you.
We'll be right back.